Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are kicking off the new year by jumping straight into a stack of sources that show the gaming world is, well, it's suffering from some major whiplash right now.
Whiplash is a good word for it, yeah.
Right. On one side, you have this, you know, radical gameplay chaos being planned. Mm-hmm. And then right alongside it, you're seeing these moves toward profound institutional stability. It's a real contrast.
That's the core tension we need to unpack today. Our mission is to quickly process these competing signals for you. We're tracking developer philosophy, whether that's a public roadmap or a secret new matchmaking algorithm, and setting it against pure spectacle.
And the big question is what? How do they balance those two things?
Exactly. How do developers maintain the excitement of the unknown while at the same time guaranteeing predictability for their player base?
The sources are wild.
Yeah.
We're jumping from rumors about a meta-flipping item in Fortnite, based on South Park of all things, to a fascinating new behavioral matchmaking philosophy for the upcoming shooter ARC Raiders.
And then we pivot completely.
We do. We pivot completely to discuss a real legacy loss at Square Enix and then the intense community turbulence that competitive players are dealing with in Rainbow Six Siege.
It's a snapshot of the industry trying to be two things at once.
Okay, let's unpack this. I think we have to start with Fortnite because the scale of the alleged changes here is, it's almost unbelievable.
Right.
We have new details surfacing around a South Park mythic item leak.
Mm.
And forget skins. The key claim is that this item may completely change the Storm Circle mechanism.
That is instantly game-breaking, and I mean that in the most positive, meta-defining way for Epic.
Because the Storm Circle is everything in a battle royale.
It's the entire foundation. It's the invisible director that sets the pace, that, you know, reduces the safe area and forces conflict. So if an item can alter the storm's properties...
Like delay it.
Yeah.
Or create a temporary safe zone.
Exactly. Or even just shift its path. It instantly becomes the focal point of the entire meta.
What's fascinating to me here is how casually Epic seems to treat these mechanical threats now.
Mm.
This isn't just a fun cosmetic line.
Yeah.
They've partnered with adult animation before, you know, Family Guy, Bob's Burgers. But now they're integrating these really radical mechanics into the crossovers.
Right. They have trained the community to expect systems, not just cosmetics. We saw it with the anime abilities, the special movement tools, all those unique mythics.
So a playbook has changed.
Completely. The Fortnite playbook is now less about honoring the source material visually
mm-hmm.
and more about leveraging that source material to introduce systems that would otherwise feel too strange or out of place. It lets them be riskier mechanically because they can wrap the chaos in recognizable IP.
So on one hand, you have that. You have the planned radical chaos of a potential storm-altering South Park mythic.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the cognitive dissonance. Epic Games has also quietly made a very loud move by publishing their full 2026 Trello roadmap for everything. Content patches, season launches, the works.
This is where the stability signal hits hard. For a live service game that absolutely thrives on the surprise drop and the unexpected shift, publishing a full calendar for the year is a massive, intentional nod toward operational maturity.
It's like they're signaling to everyone that, yes, we might introduce a wildly unbalanced item that breaks the game for a week.
But don't worry,
we already know when the patch to fix it or replace it is coming out.
Precisely. And this timing makes sense because Chapter 7, Pacific Break, already made these foundational changes, altering how players land, how battle pass pages are unlocked.
These are core motivation loops.
Core loops.
Yeah.
So by giving players a full, visible 2026 calendar, Epic gives content creators a plan, it lets competitive players time their breaks, and it acts as a safety net. The roadmap says, we are in control, even if the meta itself feels out of control.
It balances spectacle with reliability.
That's it.
Speaking of philosophical shifts designed to bring stability, let's move over to ARC Raiders. Embark CEO Patrick Soderlund confirmed their game will match players based on their playstyle, not just rank or KD.
Mm.
What is the fundamental problem they're trying to solve with this kind of behavioral matchmaking?
They're trying to reduce player churn, specifically churn caused by what you could call emotional mismatch.
Emotional mismatch.
Yeah, think about extraction shooters or sandboxes. The fun relies on tension and uncertainty. But if you're a player who enjoys slow tactical scavenging, a methodical planner, and you keep getting dumped into lobbies full of hard pushers.
The people who just sprint, loot, and immediately engage.
Right. Your experience feels constantly ruined. You're not playing the same game emotionally.
So the system looks at your behavior,
yeah.
How aggressively you move, how often you initiate conflict, that sort of thing. and it tries to curate the lobby for a more consistent type of engagement.
Precisely. If they can group similar player archetypes, the losses feel less unfair, and the wins feel more earned based on your preferred strategy. The goal is to provide a predictable social experience inside an unpredictable game world.
But doesn't that come with its own risks? I mean, couldn't sorting players by methodical just create slow, boring lobbies where no one ever actually engages?
That is the big challenge, absolutely. The system has to remain opaque enough to stop players from gaming the behavior metrics while also mixing the styles just enough to keep that tension.
So it can't be too rigid?
No. If the algorithm is too rigid, you end up creating these predictable single-genre matches, and that undermines the whole point of a sandbox. That's why transparency is key here. Players tend to distrust any hidden system, so Embark will have to manage expectations really, really carefully.
This constant iteration and mechanical tuning really defines the future of live service. But let's shift focus now to the creative bedrock. What happens when the long-term architects of a franchise actually make a move? The news that Toshiyuki Idehana has left Square Enix after about 30 years, it feels monumental. He's the veteran character designer best known for shaping the whole aesthetic of Final Fantasy IX.
It absolutely is monumental. And the loss of a long-tenured designer like Idehana is often the biggest threat to long-term creative stability a studio can face. For a series defined by its art style, character design isn't just illustration. It's fundamental story design. It's visual grammar.
And he defined the entire visual identity for one of the most beloved entries in the entire franchise.
Exactly. I mean, you look at FFAX, his designs were deliberately non-realistic. They focused on communication.
Like Vivi.
Vivi is the perfect example. His oversized hat, the large glowing eyes, they instantly convey fragility and youth and wonder. Or Steiner's bulky, almost comical armor, which is just a visual metaphor for his rigid sense of duty.
The design tells the story before the dialogue does.
It sells the personality, yeah. And his contribution goes so far beyond single character sheets, it's the loss of decades of institutional memory.
That's the key term, isn't it? Institutional memory.
It is. It means the proprietary design heuristics, the undocumented taste that allows a new monster design or a new UI illustration to instantly look like it belongs in the Final Fantasy universe. He worked across concept art, monster direction, all the subtle visual cues.
So when that knowledge walks out the door,
it creates an unfillable visual gap that the studio now has to consciously rebuild.
That's a powerful point about stability being about more than just server uptime. It's about maintaining that visual cohesion. Shifting to another major RPG director, we also saw Cyberpunk 2077 creative director Igor Sarzyski defend a long-standing critique about that game's structure.
Oh, about the short Act 1.
Yeah, specifically the length of Act 1. His defense offers some real insight into modern open-world design philosophy. He pushed back against the idea that extending that highly linear, tutorial-heavy first act would have actually improved the game.
Which is a common complaint from players, right? That it felt too brief, that it sacrificed character development for speed.
It is. But the structural necessity, according to Sarzyski, was maximizing player agency and time in the open world. Act 1 is basically the lengthy tutorial.
It gets the core mechanics and the existential threat established.
Right. And CD Projekt Red wanted players in Night City in the sandbox as quickly as possible. So the short Act 1 was a deliberate choice to shift focus from linear story to emergent exploration. It's a designer standing firm, arguing that structural brevity was the price of open-world freedom.
An interesting defense.
Moving from creative philosophy back into community operations, Ubisoft is currently battling some major security woes around Rainbow Six Siege.
Yeah, this is not a good look.
We are seeing reports of mass 67-day bans spreading through the community, and this is right after that late December security incident.
It's a major trust crisis. The timing is terrible, coming so soon after they stabilized the servers. And the big uncertainty fueling all this player anxiety is whether this is a cleanup measure for previous exploits or...
or if it's a brand new ongoing security breach.
Exactly. And the 67-day duration is just bizarrely specific. Why not 60 days or a week?
That specific number immediately raises red flags. It amplifies all the speculation. Is it an anti-cheat system going rogue? Are bad actors manipulating the ban system?
For a competitive shooter where players invest hundreds of hours into ranked grind and account value, a 67-day ban effectively wipes out 2 months of competitive effort. It's incredibly disruptive.
So transparency is key here.
Transparency and speed and resolution are paramount. Every hour this uncertainty persists, player distrust and Ubisoft's ability to secure the game just increases exponentially.
On a much brighter note for community relations, we have news from the world of Final Fantasy XIV. Director Naoki Yoshida Yoshi-P has signaled the dev team is actively listening, specifically about character customization.
And this is huge for the FXIV community. It's probably the most invested community in its character's visual identity across any major MMO. So Yoshida, just confirming the team is considering more customization options, even with sparse details, tells the players that conversation is active internally. It reinforces that unique player-developer relationship the game fosters.
But he also acknowledged a more niche feature, updates to Explorer mode. Why is that important?
Because it shows the team understands the game's culture isn't just about the combat pipeline. Explorer mode is the feature that strips away threats and lets players just exist in the world.
For tourism, for screenshots, for content creation.
From Machinima, yeah. By investing in this niche feature, they're investing directly in the social appeal and the whole content creation ecosystem around the game. It acknowledges that FFXIV is a virtual world first and a raid gauntlet second. A really smart move.
Okay, let's wrap up this deep dive with a quick run through some other notable industry and product news.
We've covered chaos, stability, and creative loss. Give us the final market temperature check.
Our game of the week, released January 5th, is Doomcrawl. This is an open-world action-adventure where players ride a gigantic crustacean creature festooned with black powder cannons.
I'm sorry, with black powder cannons.
Black powder cannons. You can play solo or with up to three friends in co-op. I have to say, that is one of the more unique concepts we've seen this month.
It is certainly committed to its aesthetic. I mean, a co-op monster-riding action game with black powder seems designed to hit a very specific, quirky niche of, like, nautical sandbox fun.
Yay.
We'll see if the mechanics live up to the bizarre description.
On the merchandise front, Pokemon and Build-A-Bear added Ponyta to their plush line. And, importantly for collectors, the plush includes a sleeper outfit in the bundle.
That's the key. That included outfit definitely drives the FOMO and the collector urgency. It ensures fans get that complete package feeling. It's a very calculated merchandising move to maximize those initial sales.
And finally, on the balance front, Apex Legends has its January 2026 update coming. Looks like significant balance changes targeting Octane, Newcastle, and Crypto.
So Respawn is continuing to tweak the meta of its most popular legends. No surprise there.
And Amazon Prime Gaming confirmed 10 free PC games for January 2026. So a good stack for subscribers.
Nice.
So wrapping up this deep dive, we saw games implementing foundational shifts in how their live service is managed. You have Fortnite adding surprising predictability with a full roadmap right next to the possibility of game-breaking mythics.
Right, and ARC Raiders tackling player retention with that behavioral matchmaking.
And at the same time, we felt the powerful impact of developer legacy and institutional knowledge with Adahana's departure from Square Enix.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, these stories reveal a modern struggle in the industry, balancing the need to give players absolute operational clarity through roadmaps and transparent feedback loops like FFXIVs with the need to maintain the unexpected chaos that keeps live games exciting.
Whether that's a mechanical surprise or, unfortunately, dealing with security turbulence.
Exactly. The relationship between developer and player is undergoing this rapid structural change. It's an attempt to be both a reliable utility and a fountain of constant surprises.
Which brings us to a final question for you, the learner, to consider. We saw the monumental impact of Toshiyuki Itahana's visual design on Final Fantasy IX. These characters are iconic because he defined their visual grammar.
Mm-hmm.
So if a single long-tenured artist holds that much proprietary institutional knowledge about a series' identity, what happens to the future aesthetic of a long-running franchise like Final Fantasy when that knowledge, that undocumented taste in memory, walks out the door?
Is creative identity sustainable when it depends so heavily on individual tenure?
Something to think about as studios continue to evolve and scale.